You have to podcast on something that you're truly passionate about. If you want to start a podcast just to start a podcast, it's probably not going to go very far if you don't have a true passion for it. It's got to be something that really lights you up. You got to be passionate about the content.
Most hosts never achieve the results they hoped for. They're falling short on listenership and monetization, meaning their message isn't being heard and their show ends up costing them money. This podcast was created to help you grow your listenership and make money while you're at it. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Adam Adams.
What's up, podcaster? It's your friend, Adam A. Adams. And today I am with Josh Bloom, who has got a podcast called Effect, which is all about mountain biking. If you listen to this podcast enough, you probably know that I love mountain biking. In 2020, I got really into it. It was my way of going to the gym since the gyms were closed. And I haven't looked back. I still have really enjoyed it. So it's kind of interesting. I never even knew that they had podcasts about mountain biking, although it would have been obvious for me to think that they have a podcast about anything. Josh Bloom started his podcast because he really wanted to leave a legacy. And so we're going to be talking about him leaving a legacy, being more less worried about financial gain, a little bit less worried about growing his business through it, and a little bit more of what can he do to impact with the world and trails. So we're going to learn a little bit, since it's a little bit different than typical. And he started a different podcast once, and then his new podcast actually has switched a little bit the way that he's doing it. And so we're going to get some pros and cons on what that looks like, talk a little bit about some of the mistakes that he made, some of his best advice that he's going to pour into a brand new podcaster. One of the cool things that I think you're really going to get out of today's episode is some tips and strategies on finding good guests, more well-known guests, people that might be hard to find, hard to reach. Josh has been able to get some really cool people on his show. And well, he's also got some ad space on the podcast. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. So Josh, this podcast that you started from about the time we're recording, it's been a little less than 2 years. How many episodes in are you exactly in that 2 years?
I am 68 episodes in for the Trail Effect.
So out of curiosity, with 68, is that less than one a week? Is that what I'm doing on the math there?
Yes, it's less than one a week. And we can get more into that when it comes to mistakes.
Well, all right, well, let's just jump into the mistakes, because the listener's like, what mistakes has he made? I want to know. So with your podcast, what do you think are, let's say, the top three things that you wish you could did a different way?
Initially, this podcast was on mountain bike radio, and there's a lot of pros with that, because mountain bike radio has been around for a long time. It's probably one of the original, if not the original, podcast on mountain biking. And for those that know that radio or mountain bike radio, it has a lot of different shows and hosts on it. And the problem with this for me, while I had an immediate audience, which was a huge pro, I had no control over when the content would go out. And because I had no control over when the content would go out, I would sometimes have a couple shows to the guy who runs mountain bike radio, and he's doing this for all the right reasons, but it's not his passion anymore. And he would sit on that content for a while. And sometimes a couple shows would come out back to back. Sometimes it'd be weeks between shows. And I just had no control over someone else uploading the feed to Libsyn, which is where it was hosted.
Got it. So one thing is, although you got the additional exposure through being on that bigger platform, it wasn't you being the main owner, you being the main one in control, and you might just have a team or employees, or you could just publish it whenever you wanted. Sometimes it would go a little time between episodes. Out of curiosity, though, because we kind of started to talk about this, how did that affect the fact that you publish fewer than, you know, one a week over the last almost 2 years?
I actually can't answer that because I never saw the data. You know, I do know that having consistent, reoccurring timeliness in your episodes and having something people can come to expect is super important. You know, now I release shows on Tuesdays. Hashtag yeah. Trail Effect Tuesday.
Trail Effect Tuesdays.
You had asked about other cons or another thing that I learned maybe would have been to really hone in on making sure you have backups to your backups. What I mean by that is backup audio, because I've had technology go bad.
For me, I typically just use my Zoom and I don't always record a backup. And a lot of people think I'm crazy for that. And especially if they are podcast coaches, especially if they are in the space, if they're an audio engineer, if they've been doing podcasting since 2007, when it like first started, they would expect that Adam Adams, being a podcast coach and consultant, would certainly have at least one backup. And I have a Rodecaster Pro. I can easily just put a little chip in there and record each and every episode and always have that secondary backup in case something messes up with Zoom, either because of internet or because of audio or because my memory gets too full. I could easily refer to that, but I don't. And I think you're saying a backup to the backup. If Adam's just got like one, Josh is hoping for three separate recording. Is that right?
Yes. If I'm recording remotely, that is. I've used Riverside and I've used Squadcast. I used Squadcast when I was with Mountain Bike Radio. I switched to Riverside for a brief period and then switched back to Squadcast. And I've had that audio from Squadcast and from Riverside not render. And so I wouldn't get my guests' audio. I've had it on my side, but they have backups. So they have the main audio and then they have the backup. So there's your first two right there. And then my third is my Zoom H6, which is on my desk, plugged into, and I use a Audio Technica, I think ATR or whatever, 2100. That sounds right.
Yeah.
And you can use, you know, there's multiple ports or plugs in the back of that thing.
Yep.
And so it is plugged into my laptop through the USB. And it is also plugged into my Zoom H6 through a port on the side of the left and right top mic, using just a regular 3.5 millimeter plug. And then I also have the same microphone plugged in to a different channel on the H6. And so I can record on the H6. I can record, you know, the main one on Squadcast or Riverside or whatever your hosting platform is that you're using, in your case, Zoom. And then there's always a backup that they provide. The problem with the backup that they provide is it's not separate audio for each person.
Okay. Who does your editing and post-production?
That'd be me.
And you prefer to have it with a separate audio, or is it the only way? Is it a way? What are thoughts on that?
I prefer separate audio.
Okay.
There's a couple of reasons. One is I believe it's easier to get any weird noises out, improve audio quality.
Yeah.
I am a person that, and I probably am a little bit too OCD on this, but I prefer to pull out a lot of ums. I don't pull out all the ums because I think it's unnatural if you pull all of them out, but I'll pull a lot of them out. I'll also pull out breathing. You know, if there's any kind of heavy breathing or whatever, I'll pull that out because I try to get my audio as distraction-free as possible. And sometimes that's not possible. And then if somebody talks over somebody else, you can actually pull those and manipulate that audio so you can make it so they can still ask their question and get those two different people to not appear like they're talking over each other.
Yeah, I definitely hear that. So if it's all combined, then there's nothing you can do. But if you do have separate audio with one file for you and one separate file for me, you and I both happen to be talking at the same time. With a separate audio, you could take mine out so that it didn't become a distraction. Is that right?
I could take it out, or I could split it up and actually have you talk and then me talk. And so it doesn't appear to be talking over each other, but the question, if you were asking a question or if I was asking a question, it could still be asked.
Got it. So how long does it take you to do all that? It sounds like a lot of work. And I think somebody listening is thinking, what I expected was the standard here was that I just put on bumpers and then I wrote my show notes. For you, when we're getting rid of ums and uhs, when we are needing to go in and fix when people might be talking over each other, or if there's an annoying breath or something like that, where it was too loud, and you're going in by yourself and you're actually taking this out, is this taking an extra 1 hour per episode? Is it taking an extra 16 hours per episode? What does it take for you to do all that work?
I tell people I usually have anywhere from 6 to 10 hours into each episode, which includes the interview itself. Now, I've had some interviews go super long, a couple, two that have gone over 2 hours, one that went over 3 hours. That's a lot of editing. The good thing was with the guy that went over 3 hours, he wanted to keep everything pretty raw. And so we did, I tried to improve the audio quality the best I could, but didn't break it up. I also tell my guests that if they want to say something over, you know, if they got their company tagline wrong or whatever, that we can always edit that out, because I want them to feel comfortable with the interview and knowing that if they screw something up, that it's not going to go out for the masses to hear.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, when you're having that conversation with them and letting them know that they can mess it up, you have to figure out where that was somehow. Is that in a cut note? Like as you're recording it, are you writing it down or typing it out? He said something at like 20 minutes and 57 seconds that we need to edit out, or is it just something that you listen for in post-production?
It is something I listen to in post-production. I don't do a lot of writing during my interviews because I really like to focus on listening so we can take the conversation where it needs to go. If that guest has something really engaging and we say we need to go off on a tangent, we go off on a tangent.
Yeah, that makes sense. We got a couple cons, a couple things that you would do differently. Is there one more that you had in mind? One more thing that if you started your journey over in this, that you know for a fact you would do a little bit differently now that you've learned it?
I'm torn on whether or not I would have started out with mountain bike radio. I know that it gave me a really huge audience. Like my download numbers were really good. But at the same time, I didn't experience any of the pain or learning curve of the other stuff that goes into podcasting, such as figuring out, where am I going to host it? Am I going to host it on Libsyn or Podbean or Blueberry or whatever? You know, there's a bunch of different hosting sites. And I went back and forth over that when I knew I was going off of mountain bike radio. And I probably spent too much time agonizing over, where do I go? A lot of my learning curve got really steep once I was knew I was going to go from mountain bike radio to just Trail Effect.
Yeah. If we were doing like this same thing, you were able to somehow get all of your audio from them, I believe, like somehow get permission that you could publish your own or whatever. Like, how do we think through that process? I've never gone through it myself. I've never partnered up with a larger company in order to do that. And I don't know how I would know if I get the audio, if they get the audio. Is the audio going to show up on both podcasts? Is it just going to go on mine? So basically wondering, since it wasn't that long ago that you switched that, there might have been something like, I'm going to estimate 50 episodes that they had published that you were able to still put on to your new podcast when you actually launched that. And it's spelled differently if you're listening, E-A-F-F-E-C-T. So spell it that way, because I'll let Josh share with you what it means, why it's spelled that way here in a sec. But how did you get those 50 episodes onto your new podcast? Was it challenging? Was there hoops to jump through? I'm very curious about that.
That was actually pretty simple. And the reason why was because I was the one that did all the post-production. And so I already had all the audio. And what I did with Mountain Bike Radio is I would give them the full like show notes, MP3 file, all of it to load to Libsyn as a final product, which is why I was mildly frustrated on when stuff wouldn't go out in a timely fashion. And I understand why I didn't, but I wanted to have full control over that. So I actually did all that post-production myself. Whether or not there's a gray area on who owned it, it went out there. I still have a really good relationship with the guy that owns Mountain Bike Radio. We left on great terms. He basically come to the conclusion that it just wasn't in his wheelhouse to continue doing it.
With me and my podcast, this podcast, I'm considering one day, and I want to do it sooner than later, to be honest, I'm considering bringing on multiple additional hosts for the podcast on podcasting, where we can still publish daily episodes. Well, when I say still do that, we were at 6 a week for a long time, and now we're going to be 2 a week during the summer of 2020. We'll be at 2 a week for a minute. But here I am thinking to myself, wouldn't it be so great give some people some more exposure, kind of like your relationship with MTB Radio. Give some hosts some additional exposure, let them pour into our listener to teach and train on the subjects of growing an audience and things like that. If I were to start it, do you have any thoughts of best practices since you've kind of been on the other side of that, that might help me and a listener if that's what they want to do as well?
I think the only thing that I could add for that specific question is try to stay focused on your podcast on podcasting. Mountain Bike Radio was really good in a sense that they always had multiple shows under Mountain Bike Radio, but that was a pretty broad spectrum. Way back in the day, there was shows on trail building, and it was just a solo cast guy that would give Ben audio. There was shows on nutrition. There was shows on gravel riding. There was shows where bike shop employees just had bike shop banter, essentially, and talked about industry stuff. And then there was regional-based shows. There was a show in there called New England Dirt, which is where I pulled Driftless Dirt from, my old podcast. And that was mountain biking in the New England area. And so I think that was probably too broad because some people might come to Mountain Bike Radio just to listen to New England Dirt, but they might not want to listen to nutrition, or they might not care about gravel riding or vintage mountain bikes. And that was what went into my thought process in pulling Trail Effect off of Mountain Bike Radio, that I really wanted it to stand on its own. If people are coming to listen to it, I wanted them to come listen to trails and trail communities and the people behind that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I love that because there's this marketing, the phrase that keeps like popping in my head as you're discussing that. It's something to the effect, and everybody calls it a little bit different, but if you're trying to speak to everybody, you're speaking to nobody. It basically is that when you are being as broad as it sounds like some places can be, totally broad, gravel bikes and other things, the person that comes there doesn't necessarily know that it's for them. I've got a client that's onboarding right now. And when we bring on a new client for podcasting, we give them a avatar questionnaire so that we can understand exactly who it is that they're trying to target. And she actually came up with 4 avatars, which was interesting to me, 4 different avatars. And in short, one of them was like 70 years old, one of them was 45, one of them was 37, and the other one was 23 years old. Some of them had jobs, some of them didn't have jobs. Some of them had kids, some didn't have kids. Everything in between. And I had gotten an email from her that literally last night, we had our coaching call today, where she said, we had multiple avatars, and here's the first 2 avatars. She filled out that whole questionnaire twice. She said, before I go to bed, I'm going to do the rest. My comment was, take the night off. Let's just you and I get on a call. Because if she's going to try to communicate to all of those people, some with jobs, some without jobs, some with a lot of money, some barely getting some money right now, and all of these in-betweens, 2 of them are female, 2 of them were male avatars. It's like, how are you going to do that? How are you going to make the gravel rider happy? How are you going to make the person who just wants banter happy? How are you going to get the trail rider happy when they have to sit through all of that other stuff that's certainly not for them? And I will say, because I just have a bad attitude against gravel riding. Josh, you might have a gravel bike and you're like, I love it. Why would you feel that way? But when people do gravel, I'm like, why do a gravel? Either do mountain bike or road biking. And to me, it's just this like bad attitude. And all that's meaning, regardless if our listener has a gravel bike and they're so proud of it, I'm not judging you in particular or anything like that. It's just that if there was a podcast that was called something about mountain biking, I would be stoked. But as soon as it talked about like gravel bikes or just vintage bikes or something else, for me personally, I would say this podcast is not for me because it doesn't always serve me. It only sometimes serves me. What else do you want to say about that, Josh?
I'd like to expand on that a little bit. And that goes into the whole avenue of subscribers or followers or however it's whatever platform labels it that way, right? So I had people that wanted to listen to my podcast, Trail Effect, when it was on Mountain Bike Radio, but didn't subscribe or follow Mountain Bike Radio because they didn't want the other stuff. They just wanted to listen to what was done on Trail Effect. And so I think you could be doing yourself a disservice if you're that broad on one platform. You know, you should maybe, if you want to do a gravel podcast, do a whole separate podcast. It's almost the same amount of work. Kind of dupe your customers into something that if you're coming here to listen to the podcast on podcasting, stay in that lane, right?
For the most part, we don't teach anything about even video. I mean, we can have video as a second purpose, but we're not always talking about lighting. I don't think in 250-ish episodes recorded that we've ever talked about how to get a YouTube studio perfect. We always talk about the podcast side and what's in it for me, I think is what our listener is wondering right now. What am I getting out of this episode? Today, we are talking a little bit about mountain bike and some of that because that's what your show is about. But I think that the value that comes out of today's episode should be and will be focused on helping anyone who's a podcaster to be able to learn lessons and grow less from this. And I think that's critically important for how we're doing it. I mentioned a moment ago that you spelled effect differently. Why? What does it mean? Do you love it? Do you hate it? What are your thoughts there?
I personally like it. What went on with the spelling of it was when I came up with the concept to move away from Driftless Dirt into a podcast that could be national about trails and trail communities, what do you name it? You need to name it something, right? And so I talked to a friend of mine who works for, he's a lead planner designer for IMBA, which is the International Mountain Biking Association. It's a close personal friend of mine. He knows the space really well as far as mountain biking and communities, because that is their space. And then I also talked to the owner of Mountain Bike Radio, and the three of us kind of were going back and forth of the spelling of effect or affect. You know, do we spell it with an A or do we spell it with an E? And finally, I was like, well, it could really be both. It can affect people and it can affect people. I lean more towards the effect because I think of where I live in the upper Midwest, you know, you get lake effect snow and that affects communities. And well, if you like snow, it affects communities in a great way because you get a lot of snow from it. I lean that direction. And so that's why we call it Trail Effect, but it could be both. And so my thought was, well, let's be unique. Well, what's the one problem with being unique? People spell it A-E-F-F-E-C-T. People spell it E-A-F-F-E-C-T, which is the proper way. And then when you put it in a search engine, what do you get? Usually that search engine is trying to correct your spelling into affect or effect.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of look at it as more of a movement or a brand as being unique in that direction. It hasn't helped me get people to find the show.
So with your purpose, we mentioned this as well, of launching the podcast, there's usually one of two reasons, and sometimes both, why people start and launch a podcast. It's a lot of them are coaches and mentors and consultants, attorneys, and if they have this thought leadership platform, they'll get more clients. A lot of people don't have that, but they want to make sure that they are monetizing. And they're thinking, if I start a podcast, I don't have anything to sell, but I could get advertisers to sell things and I could make money. So reason number one that a lot of people will start a podcast is making more money, either in their own business or through the podcast specifically. And the second reason a lot of people that come to me start podcasts is generally because they just want to make an impact on the world. So it's income or impact, right? They want to make an impact. They want to leave a legacy. They want to make a difference in the way that the world is going. Can you tell us a little bit about your reason or reasons behind launching Trail Effect and how that's going so far?
First and foremost, my reason was the impact side. I have been heavily involved with my local trail community where I live on, you know, everything from basic volunteers showing up to grant writing and to getting a full trail system built through that grant writing. And so I've seen the full spectrum of what it takes to get trails built. And I think a lot of people just expect that trails are going to be there and don't really know what happens in the back end. And we like to call it the brain damage that happens, because there's a lot that goes into trail building and trail stuff, especially when it's on public land, which usually it is. It isn't always, but more times than not, it's on public land. So you have a bunch of different public agencies. You got to get buy-in from the public. There's just a lot there. And so I wanted to kind of be able to chronicle a roadmap of what it takes to get trails built and the lasting impacts, positive impacts that trails can leave on communities. I knew a lot of the answers, but I wanted to be able to talk to people who had done it a lot more than I have. And we all know that everything can be done different ways. And so if we can leave a roadmap of different ideas or different ways that worked for people and how they got trails into their community, a listener could then take a little bit from this episode or this guest or that guest to kind of figure out their own roadmap and how they could help get trails in their community. Now, the second part of that question is the monetization side of things, which I think at one point or another, you probably start to go down that path. At least I have. When I first took an ad, which is I only have one ad, I actually denied it, even though I was giving them the space for almost a year. I didn't take a payment from them. I kind of have a weird view on things, and that's evolving rapidly, especially in the last couple of weeks. Podcasting isn't free. I think some people think it is free. It's not free. There's equipment involved. There's different subscriptions, especially if you're doing it, you know, virtually or remotely. You have to pay for some kind of platform to record on. Zoom isn't free. Squadcast isn't free. Riverside FM isn't free. Libsyn isn't free. I know Dave Jackson talks about how putting a podcast onto a certain feed, if that podcast feed offers a free platform, they're probably not going to stay around for very long. So you should be on a paid platform. And I agree with that, because if I'm going to put my podcast out there, I don't want that platform to just disappear and they have to pay their employees.
I agree with that 100%. I always say you get what you pay for, but I like the way you're talking about it and Dave's point of view better than just you get what you pay for. If they aren't collecting money from you, how long can they stay in business? How long can they provide this service that obviously costs them time and money?
And that's where I'm going with the Trail Effect podcast, is that we all have a limited amount of time and resources to our disposal. Most of us have families. It's the same model I look at with volunteering. Like volunteering for trail construction and trail building and trail maintenance is good to a certain point, but it's a resource that I think is leaned on too heavily in the trail community, because volunteers are going to give their time after work and then they're going to have to choose, do I ride my bike or do I go do trail work? And if the trail system isn't close to their house, then it takes even more time. And a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people have families. And then could you imagine if all of our infrastructure was volunteer built, including like your house or the roads, all that stuff, schools, buildings?
I can't imagine it lasting very long. The altruistic view would be like, oh, that would be so wonderful. But I honestly just don't see it lasting a long time. People can get burnt out when they're not getting a real exchange. You feel good, that helps you for a while, but I think that the exchange really does help us to be able to stay with something.
The volunteer model is good, especially for communities, but it can't be the only model. You have to be diverse. Paid professional trail builders are just that, paid professional trail builders. When you're doing your job throughout the day, or I'm doing my job throughout the day, they're doing their job throughout the day. And guess what that means? More trails getting built while we're doing our jobs.
And they're probably better trails. They're probably more well built. Like the berms are probably better. Like the jumps are probably better. If it's a double or whatever, it's probably just more well built. Just consciously like thought through prior to it going. If it's the only thing somebody does versus if someone is here on the weekend deciding, should I go and put like an hour in over here, 2 hours in, or should I do something fun? And they choose to do hour or two. I don't think that they're going to get the professional quality that they would if that was kind of like their livelihood.
That's exactly it. They've had their reps. They've made the mistakes. They've learned. They do it for their full-time job. You know, I joke, in computer programmers, you can maybe get mad at me, but do we really want the computer programmer unless that guy is really, a guy or girl, is really handy with digging in the dirt? But if that person, but I want that computer programmer doing computer related stuff, but maybe, you know, moving dirt and understanding drainage and understanding what flow means and how to really put a good trail together.
Yeah. And you're kind of likening this to your podcast as well. In the past, it was more of an altruistic view, like you leaving a legacy, you supporting communities, you learning and growing. And it sounds like that recently changed. Could you go into a little bit more detail on what your goal is with the podcast moving forward then?
I'd thought about monetizing it to some degree, but once I pulled off of Mountain Bike Radio and went out on my own, and now that I can see the stats and have my own control over it, that's when I really started looking at it differently. And because I felt like I had more control over where it could go and how it could grow. It, where I didn't have that feeling I had before was just putting the content out, and it just did what it did. So now that was one thing that changed. And it does take a lot of time to put a podcast show together. I like to mountain bike a lot. I have two daughters. I have a full-time job outside of this. I had it put to me, the guest that actually came out yesterday, he really enjoys the content and he would not want to see it go away. When you're doing things as a volunteer, it's easier for it to go away.
I love that. You know, I used to be in like real estate space. I still have lots of real estate. I still have apartment buildings. I still have single families as well. But my podcast was specifically in the real estate space. And the conferences that I attended were all in the real estate space. And there's this thing called limited partners and general partners. General partners run the show of big apartment buildings. And limited partners are the passive investors, like the stock market that puts the fuel in. And there are many passive investors on that end that think to themselves, I want less fees from my general partner. I want them to not take an acquisition fee. I want them to not take a disposition fee. I want them to not take a management fee. I want as much of that money that could be available, I think could rightfully go to us, the passive investors, because we're the ones putting in the money. And there was this guy who ended up being my perfect avatar that I've also spoken about him on the show. His name is Siva Venugopalan. Siva is a 42-year-old male Indian engineer with three kids who had invested in multiple deals and had at least $1 million left to continue investing in deals. He loves to hang out, stay up at night, connect with other people. He's a bridge engineer, and I just respect the guy so much. One of the things Siva said to me once, he wants me to take fees. He wants me to make money. And for a long time, I didn't understand that. I asked Siva, why, when all of these other passive investors are like wanting me to take the smallest amount of money, you want me to take a larger amount of money? And he said, well, here's why, Adam, is if you are making money on these apartments, you have more motivation to do a good job. You have more motivation to keep doing it and to not just quit and leave the apartment. And then I lose all of my effing money. Right? Then he doesn't have any money. He loses also his investment. So for him, it was about those win-wins. And for you and your show, for you to be able to have that longevity, you need to be making money. And I have a podcast episode. I haven't looked it up specifically, but coming to my mind, I've got three that stick out about monetization: episode 5, episode 10, and episode 30 of this podcast. One of the three is about the problem that many of us have had. I used to be, and it sounds like Josh, you used to be, where I preferred not to make money through the podcast. I thought that I would be a bad person if I made money through the podcast. And now I make money through the podcast and I don't feel bad about it at all. This month, we were able to be our largest month in our whole entire history as a company, and it came through the podcast. And you know what that does to me? Gives me more motivation to keep putting out more content, to keep supporting people, to keep helping people, to keep growing, to do more marketing, to get in front of more people, because it is something where it cash flows enough to keep putting back into it so that it keeps growing. And it's a vicious upward cycle, if you will, just by making money. So I'll put episodes 5, 10, and 30 in the show notes today. And one of those in particular, if you're listening to Josh and his growth and you're thinking, hi, I never wanted to monetize, it would mean that I had the podcast for the wrong reason. This episode today hopefully will give you some of that. And also, if you go check out that other episode, 5, 10, or 30, maybe it'll get you to the next point. Josh, you mentioned Squadcast in Riverside having their own backups and it not working. And I wanted to point that out. I've lost recordings. I need to put air quotes or something. I've lost recordings. I've lost content literally because I didn't press record before we got started. I just didn't even push the freaking button. And so we're either halfway in or we do the whole damn thing and I'm waiting for it to come up and I'm like, oh crap, I didn't push record. Now what I do is I press record probably a minute or two before we even are recording the episode so that I can be sure that it's actually going. It's like one of the first things that I do. With you and wanting to have multiple backups, I need to say one thing. I've been on the other side. By the way, if you're listening, this is Josh's first time ever on somebody else's podcast. The first time he's ever been on someone else's show. Over the years, I've been on other people's podcasts and they've used either Squadcast or Riverside. And with both, I've logged off too fast or something had happened where they never got my audio. So I know that that can happen. Squadcast and Riverside seem to be able to record better audio than Zoom, better video than Zoom. And in most cases, it's easier to get the multi files. With Zoom, the default is one single file. Do you have, since I don't use Squadcast or Riverside, but you mentioned them earlier and I've had some problem with them, but I do know that their audio is better. Their video quality is better. It's less compressed than Zoom, which is what we're recording with right now. Some people won't be able to tell, but some might. Do you have any tips or tricks if we are going to use one of those platforms? Which one's better? Which one you like more? How to protect it? How to tell your guest ahead of time? Just any type of feedback that you've learned after losing some of your audio.
And I have done exactly what you said you've done, which is forgetting to hit record, both in person and through, not through Riverside, because I was only with them briefly, but through Squadcast, I've forgotten to hit record because it's easy to get talking. And then all of a sudden, like you said, you're into it. I don't do video either. I consume podcasts when I'm in a situation where I can't consume video, driving a vehicle, doing something else, you know, or just laying in bed at night. I think that's the powerful thing about podcasts in general is that they're not video involved. While I think it's good to be on multi-platforms and have that option, I don't think it's necessary. With that being said, Riverside, I believe, is better for video than Squadcast. Squadcast came to the game late with video. Squadcast is also quite a bit more expensive than Riverside. I like the way Squadcast is laid out in terms of how it looks on your screen better than Riverside, but that's personal preference too, because if it does the job, it does the job, right? I think now since I've learned
asking Josh, like the main thing that he would say to pour into a brand new podcaster, somebody who's been podcasting less than 2 years.
I think it's super important to have a local backup. You know, that's about the biggest takeaway I can have, which we've talked about, but have that local backup. I can say that you have a local backup because I'm backing this up.
There you go.
In separate channels.
Oh, nice. I love it. We're going to take a real quick break, but when we get back, I'm going to ask Josh three main questions. How does he get these top guests? Number two is, what advice is he going to give and pour into somebody who's a brand new podcaster less than 2 years into the game? And three, what's his plan? How is he going to start monetizing with the ads? So guests, advice, and ads. We'll be right back.
Hey, my friend. As you know, this episode is sponsored by my company, growyourshow.com. We want you to be able to have the best tools at your disposal without costing you a whole arm and a leg. So right now you can get a free list of vetted equipment that like mics, mixers, webcams, sound treatment, editing software, everything that you need. I created the whole PDF with direct purchase links just to save you time and money to help it be more convenient for you. So this free PDF will help you skip all the guesswork. If it's on there, it's vetted and approved by yours truly. And if it's not on there, it's probably not worth the money. So go ahead and get yours at growyourshow.com/PDF. Let's get back into the show. We're back with Josh Bloom from Trail Effect. And I want to find out, Josh, you've had some incredible guests. I actually listened to one of your podcast episodes about this guy who ended up moving to Park City, where I used to live. And this guy is just a monster. He knew people. He was successful in his field. He had been publishing like magazines and stuff like that. And just
really well known. How did you get him and or some of your other large guests? What was your strategy and how can we learn from it?
Networking is my number one strategy. And so with that particular guest, you're referring to Rob Reed. I happen to be friends with his college roommate slash first business partner. And so I reached out to Chris, who is his college roommate and business partner, to connect me with Rob Reed. Now, we don't always have that deep of a network, right? But we've all heard, a lot of us have heard about digging the well before you need it, right?
Yeah.
And that's something I know you can't remember where you took it from, but I took it from Adam Harbinger. Is it Adam Harbinger?
I don't know, but I've definitely heard that. I think about it for most things, but definitely with these relationships, you want to, I'm all about having those connections well before you ever like have to ask for anything.
Yeah, I said it wrong. It's Jordan Harbinger.
Okay.
And so when I first started podcasting, the first guest I ever got was a personal friend. I never knew what, I didn't know how to talk in a podcast. I knew that I could say 5 words and he'd go for the next 2 hours. So he was like my perfect guest. But beyond that, I have people with friends that are within the industry and I've talked to them about being on the show. They've come onto the show. And a lot of times you get one guest, that guest might know 4 other people that would be good for your show. And maybe you don't know if they're all good, but say 2 of the 4 people are. And so they connect you with those 2 people. Well, those 2 people can connect you with 2 more people and it just grows kind of like compound interest, you know? And so that's how I have sourced a lot of my guests. I've also just done cold messages or cold emails. And usually that works. It's strange, but it works. When you tell them you have a podcast, they want to come on the show. It's rare that I've had somebody say no.
I'm 100% with you. I've tried that as well. I've tried connecting with people and I had this like fear of rejection. Absolutely. Just like want to ask a girl out. I'm like, they're going to see how ugly I am and how fat I am and how low confidence that I have. And they're going to say no for sure. And so a lot of times I don't ask that question. I don't ask for that sponsor. I don't ask for that guest. I don't ask for that woman's number because I'm pretty sure they're going to reject me. You know, like what I found is it's not true. And in fact, when getting guests, because you have a platform, it's a very compelling, a very handsome thing for you to have is a listener base that is exactly who they want to add to. And a lot of times they want to give value just as much as they want the exposures in both ways. It's very easy. I get rejected for guests on the podcast much less than I do for maybe sponsors or when I'm asking a woman out or something like that. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on you've done to be able to get good guests, like DMing people or anything that could be helpful before your big advice?
My only additional thought on that is if you ask a guest, whatever form that is, whether it's a direct message or otherwise, and they say no, you're still in the same place, right?
Yeah.
What's the hurt in it? And that's something that I've had to continue to tell myself is like, if they say no, they say no. You don't know unless you try.
The answer is already no.
Correct.
Or the answer is right now no, if you don't ask. And it's a maybe or actually a more potential if you just reach out. So what do you think if I'm completely brand new, I'm listening today and I really want to make sure that I have a successful podcast. What's like the biggest, best advice that you could give me?
I would for sure listen to podcast on podcasting.
Oh.
And this isn't like paid advertising or anything. This is there's a lot of details that are good to get familiar with, whether it's microphone setup, recording device, what platform to use. There's just a lot of different things that it's good to get nailed down. And so when you can go to a resource that allows you to get those things, it's important because it is important to have a decent mic. You don't have to have the best mic, but have a decent mic. I've never recorded a podcast through an iPhone, but apparently it can be done. I wouldn't suggest that. And I would have a way to record both in person and remotely. With the whole 2020 COVID thing, however you want to call it, like that made remote things just way more acceptable, which is why I decided to go with Trail Effect. When I did Driftless Dirt, it was all in person. Mm. And then in person wasn't an option anymore. And so that made remote, which means you can go across the world and record. And so to have multiple options, both I like in person a lot, but you still need to be able to do something like what we're doing. And we're in different time zones, you and I are right now.
Yeah. What do you think about something inspirational, less on listen to Adam's podcast and more like hit our hearts and make us really want to make sure we crush this?
You have to podcast on something that you're truly passionate about. If you want to start a podcast just to start a podcast, it's probably not going to go very far if you don't have a true passion for it.
Yeah.
It's got to be something that really lights you up. You got to be passionate about the content. And for me, I'm really passionate about trails. You know, trails to me are everything. Without trails, I wouldn't be able to mountain bike. So that's where my passion is with trails.
Really good. And getting to the last point before I let you go, man, there is this sponsor that you had on your podcast that a year or two ago, you wouldn't even let them give you money. So share with us now that you kind of have changed some stuff. What's your plan? What's your strategy? Where are you going to go with monetizing?
Well, I'm going to be the first mountain bike podcast that makes millions. I'm just kidding. The reality is that you got to frame it the way you framed it earlier in this episode. And that is in the way kind of we talked about with volunteers, like the script in your head, which is what I'm currently struggling with and doing right now, but flip the script in your head and why you would monetize it for the longevity of it. A lot of people do a lot of different things for hobbies, but a lot of those hobbies are truly self-serving. Whereas I think a podcast and trail building and the stuff that I'm into is, and I'm going to take this from Matthew McConaughey, the intersection of selfish and selfless, because it's a selfish endeavor for me to want to get knowledge from other people, but it's a selfless endeavor to share that knowledge with the masses. And if people are getting value from you, that is something that you are leaving with them that they can hopefully take with to inspire them to do something different. And so at the end of the day, like you really need to make it your avatar or whatever you want to call it. You're really in service to other people. Even though it does serve yourself, you need to be serving other people. And that's where the monetization comes in.
Yeah. And that is with my business too. I always forget his name. He says it might be Zig Ziglar. That might be wrong. But if you help enough other people get what they want, you'll have everything in life that you want. And the podcast, its purpose is to help people get to their next level. In a lot of ways, our businesses probably should be too. So like my company, Grow Your Show, we serve podcasters so that they can grow their shows. They can monetize their shows. They don't have to put in the 10 hours of work that you're putting in to edit it. We kind of try to take off some of that stuff. And absolutely, we make money doing it. And I mentioned on this episode, we had our best month this month. But when I do it, I really feel like I'm trying to help them because they have a show that needs to get in front of the masses. They've got a show that they need to be able to grow and get in front of their audience. And so it's just such a interesting thing, that intersection that you took from Matthew McConaughey from selfish and selfless. And some of us feel like you can only have one or the other. I think that a lot of us feel like we are unable to do the one if we're doing the other. It has to be an or. And I think it can be an and. I think we can serve others and also be in a good financial position ourselves through our podcast or through our business. I think that's an awesome thing that you mentioned, a really good way to end the episode. If you're listening and you're into mountain biking at all, I just started listening to this guy's podcast. He reached out and I'm all about what it is that he's trying to do with his show. And I think it might be beneficial for you to check that out as well. I hope you got a ton of value from this episode today. And I want you to remember that every other episode is either an interview episode or the opposite is a solo episode. And on the solo episodes, they're usually a little bit shorter, just me pouring into you. And so jump on to the very next episode. That'll be me pouring into you. I'll see you there. By the way, one way to ensure that you don't miss out on great content that we're producing on a regular basis is to make sure you're subscribed to the show. You need to be subscribed or following the Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to it in order not to miss all of that. And before I let you go, I need to mention, because a lot of people are asking, do you help? Can you help me with this? And the answer is yes. My company actually does it. It's called Grow Your Show. And you can find that at growyourshow.com. Our clients, they call us the easy button for podcaster because they simply have to record their episode and they know that every single thing else is done for them. We sweat the hard stuff so you can be the star of your show. And if you would like help to make sure that we're editing and publishing and promoting and doing your social media, it's all in one place. And I think it's pretty affordable. You'll have to take a look for yourself. Just go to growyourshow.com and check us out. And by the way, I'll see you on the next episode.